Okay. All right. I told you that we were going to go back over, let's say, the events in Abraham's life and try to remember. This is the reason why I'm doing this, because God set the stage with him first. And so if we see a pattern or see a pattern that we can understand of the thinking of God, which is the primary reason for going through the life of Abraham, then we can understand the pattern that he did through his son Isaac. And then you'll see another pattern. It's not exactly the same, but another pattern through Jacob and his life. This one thing nice about this thing, I had to revamp this thing. I found myself made a mistake last week. So I'm telling you, I admit, oops. I said it was the last thing he had when he got to land. You know that he went back to the very same place he held his very first altar. Nope, wrong spot. So that's the error last week. So we're going to talk about Abraham and how. Yeah, we could talk about how he responded. But at the very same time, I want to place that you need to probably look, or if you can look, into your own life. You know, I look into my own life, and I can almost tell you, approximately, when God began to deal with my life. Because I was non-religious person. I was not a religious guy. And all of a sudden, something struck me. It had to do with politics, believe it or not. So I asked my brother a question. He couldn't answer it. So he veered me to hear somebody on radio. And this guy was talking about politics. I said, okay, now you know what he's talking about. So next day, I listened to it. He talked nothing about the Sabbath. And I said, who? And it tricked me to look at the Bible and find out, what is the Sabbath? What is it? What time is it? You know, and all of a sudden, that was a change in everything in my world. But before then, I don't know when God really began to deal with me. But I do want to talk about Abraham, because basically, in the 11th chapter of Genesis, you know, it starts out with the whole nation, the whole world had one language. You remember that? And so they had a goal in mind, and God changed the goal, right? It was God's actions, not men's actions. It was God's actions that changed the whole definition of history of mankind. Because he changed the history of mankind during the flood, too. God always changes history, even though man would like to think they are, they want to make a dent in history. They want to come down to one of the most historical events. No, it's God who makes history. Now, in Genesis 11th chapter, we're just going to go briefly. These are just the highlights. And it says now that when God scattered people all over the place, there was one place that he scattered them into, a certain individual he scattered into, and that happened to be Terah. Remember who Terah is? Whom? Abraham's father. God began to deal with Abraham's father first. Later on, we'll find out that yes, God did begin to deal with Abraham, even though Abraham was unaware he'd been dealt with. Okay, now what did God do with Terah? Terah took his son Abram and his grandson Lot, and the son of Haran, and his daughter-in-law Sarah, and his Sarai, and his son, and his son Abram's wife, and they went out from Ur of Chaldea and to the land of Canaan. That's where God was going to send Terah, right? Well, he didn't make it, did he? His son died, Haran died, and that ended the journey for Terah. And then God turned and told Abraham, Now, I want you to leave your father and your mother. But the first incident in Abraham's life, the very first event in Abraham's life was his father moving, getting out of Ur and moving, heading toward the very land that God had in mind to give to his son. We may not look at it that way, but that's what took place. So, when you look at your life, or I look at my life, somewhere along the line, long before you began even realizing what was happening, you've been moved. It's not the history of your mom, your dad, it's not the events of school, it's not the events of college, not the events of a chaos, it's the events of God moving you to where he wants to put you and place you. Now, sometimes it's not necessarily pleasant. The case for Terah, he lost his son, whom he was very, very close to. Quote, might have been his favorite son. Now, it doesn't tell you how his son died, it's just he just died. Now, when we look back on this thing, I know that there's an awful lot of things have been said from in the Jewish world that Terah was a pagan. That he made idols. He didn't know who God was. That's not what it says here. Stick with what is written. So my main thing is stick with what's written. Because this is like 500 years after the flood, plus or minus. They're fully aware what took place. They're fully aware what took place a few hundred years earlier when all the languages changed. And they're fully aware who made the language change. These were not a bunch of dumb idiots coming out of the ground like amoebas and finally changing into adults. They were human beings that were created by God. The same mind, the same set you have. They're able to think, able to talk, able to walk, able to eat, able to communicate, and they were also able to know who El Shaddai was. He became known as El Shaddai, right? He wasn't known as Yahweh, Yahuwah, Elohim. He was known as El Shaddai. Very well-known name in those days. And so we take a look at this thing. So the very first thing is, it's the beginning of Abraham's journey. Happened in a place called Ur in Chaldea. It didn't happen at the place of Haran. Happened in the place of Ur. Later on we'll see that God said, I pulled you out of Ur, Abraham. I pulled you from there. That's where he began to deal with it. So when we look at our life, we say, oh, that's fascinating, right? And then God comes along, and now he says something to Abraham in the 12th chapter. Right? We're pretty well familiar with it. We all know that. This is the second event, but some people think it's the first one. It really is the second event to take place in his life. Second event was what? He called and said to Abram, get out of your country, from your family, and from your father's house, to a land that I will show you. So Abraham did, right? Now I know there's some things, I'm sorry, I got to make a comment here. I'm one of these people who picture Abraham was one intelligent man, and Sarah was one very intelligent lady. Lot was a very intelligent man. Lot's wife was an intelligent woman. They weren't a bunch of dummies, following along like a bunch of sheep. There, cliff was all off cliff with Abraham. And that movie they had out from History Channel, one of the scenes that really upset me like crazy, was where Abraham, quote, heard the voice of the Lord. And the expression on the face of Sarah was, what? Dumb. Lot, say, you heard what? Are you listening to voices? And Lot's wife was just about as dumbfounded in her face. Boy, what a dumb guy. And the stupidity of the movie was, Sarah, who thought Abram was a dumb idiot, Lot thought Abram was a dumb idiot, Lot's wife thought Abram was a dumb idiot. They went with him. So, and the whole picture was, who's the idiot? If they all believed he was an idiot for listening and hearing a voice. God thought, no. Who never does that, you know? And they really turned me off like crazy. There's something very special about the family. This particular family that Terah moved from Ur to this place. That particular family, guess where Isaac got his wife from? That place in Ur. I mean, that place in Haran. Why? Because Rebecca knew and understand God. What about Isaac? I mean, not Isaac, Jacob. Where did he get his wives? Same place. Why did he go there for? Because they knew who God was. Jacob knew who God was. Isaac knew who God, Isaac couldn't go there, but Isaac knew who God was. And so, Sarah's two daughters of Laban, they knew who God was. They weren't a bunch of savages. Now, did it mean they understood God or believed God or trusted God? That's a different issue. Go ask yourself your own personal question. When you started understanding who God was, were you perfect from the point on and always were loyal to God? Or did you say, well, not this time? How many times did you try to remove the Christmas tree from your house? Was it instantly? Or did it take a little while? Was it a pagan? Yes. How about the images that you have of some statue that was an angel or picture of Mary or picture of somebody or even the picture of the Messiah? And it took how many years did it take to get rid of it? Was it instant? Oh, great, let's get rid of it. It's no different than anybody else's life. You're no different than they were. No different. You had a hard time. Most of the time it takes 3 years. A 3-year cycle of walking in the truth before you finally say, okay, no more Easter eggs. My daughter loves Easter eggs. My kid loves them. They look at the hunt for no more Easter eggs. And your child is saying, right, because they can't play, right? They go, well, don't get this Easter bunny anymore. It takes a while, doesn't it? I see the same picture here. We're no different than they. They are no different than us. So when we start looking at these examples, do you think it was easy for Abraham to say, oh, thank you, Lord. I can't stand my dad. I can't stand my brothers. I can't stand my nephews. Thank you for letting me get out of here. Did he say that? Oh, no. He honored his father. Respected his father. He honored his brother's son. Took his son with him. And the son honored Abraham and went with him. This is what the picture is telling us here, right? Now, Abraham didn't go alone, of course. He went with Lot and Lot's wife. And also Lot's children. We'll see that later on. The kids were also with Lot because it said that Sarah had no children. As if he's going out. So the second event was, what most people think is the most important one, but it really wasn't. As we keep on going through these events, it's leading up to one of the most important events in all his life, which affects us. It came to effect because without Abraham's events that God brought him through, we ourselves will be in a world of what? Doubt. Don't believe. What it says there in Hebrews? If you believe like Abraham believed, you are what? You're what?
Righteous.
More specific. Sons of Abraham. This, we're talking about Abraham here, people. I'm addressing you about the events that happened to Abraham. And because of him, you are descendants of Abraham, period. I don't care what race you came from. Cool, that's a pagan. I mean, that's a bad statement because it's not really true. It's an evolutionary statement. It's not a biblical statement or a human statement. So when we look at this, this is why I want you, when you go through Abraham, go through these highlights, I would like for you to try to get connected to this man. Because God began with him. And the main thing God began with him was because he trusted God. Did it mean his father didn't? Doesn't say that. Because Abraham was going through a certain set of trials. Certain set of events. Tested. Where he grows and grows and grows and grows and grows. To reach to a certain peak in his life. And we are part of it. Alright? Very important. What's the third event? When he went in to the promised land, he went to a certain location. And he went to the place called Shechem. As far as the oak trees. Amarah, which means a teacher. And Yahuwah appeared to him and said something to him. Your descendants will, I will give this land to you, to them. And Abram do? He did what? Visuals. What did he do? He built the very first altar. That's where he stopped. And that's where he built the altar. In a land called Shechem. More specifically, it's pretty close to Bethel. In between Bethel and Ai. We won't have to go there. Now, why did he build it for? He what? Thank you to God. Now, Shechem becomes a very important place for Isaac or Jacob? For Jacob. Shechem becomes a very important place for Jacob. Now, so what was so important about this particular event, number three? What was so important about this event? God said to Abram, "This land I will give to your descendants." Now, how many kids did Jacob have? Did Abram have? Zilch. 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 Nada. Nothing. No one. Not a daughter, not a son, not nothing. Right? Now, well, that's a big statement, isn't it? Now, if you were Abram, and you're 75 years old, and your wife is 65 years old, you think you're going to have kids? No, more than likely you'd think, well, that doesn't make sense. Later on we find out, even Abram said, something's wrong here. You said this, but I don't know how you could do this. Now the fourth event, what happened in the fourth event? Oh, did he? Where'd he go? He went to Egypt. Okay. What? He went and built this altar between Bethel and Ai, which is near the land called Shechem. Yeah, then he went down south. He kept on going, and there was something took place there, a drought. First recorded a drought ever recorded in the Bible. Not the 10th one, not a common one, not a normal one. Remember, there's a flood before? A lot of water, like crazy. A drought? First recorded drought. Now, what happens in Abram when he said, oh, there's no rain? What was his thinking? Well, he went down to an area that had a whole lot more water. Egypt. So he went down to Egypt. And, of course, something happened there, right? And what happened there? In his life, something took place. What took place? You don't remember? The what? Did the creator of heaven and earth curse Abraham because he lied? What did he do? He blessed Abraham. Well, that's a weird God, isn't it? Have you ever done something that's contrary to God and turns into a blessing? Have you known somebody has done something that was not what God wanted but turned into a blessing? We use that term, turn into lemonade, eliminate to lemonade. Something went wrong, turned around. Has it ever happened in your life where God saw you, knew you, and you did something contrary to him, and it was not good, it was not beneficial, it was not a good thing to do, and lo and behold, he didn't damn you. He turned it around. Now, does that tell you about God? He has a favorite? Or, I'm a merciful God. I'm not going to hold this against you. We'll talk about that later if we have to. But what was the issue here? Was it Abraham? Or was it Sarah? The issue was Sarah. Did you notice that before? The issue is Sarah. Abraham's wife. Who had no kids. Now the drought was there. Did God bring upon the drought? Oh no, God has no control over the weather. God has no control over storms. God has no control over rain. He had no control. He's a worthless God. But he just, wait, what was the drought? Is that what true? Or did God bring forth the drought? And we think, no. Natural things from evolutionary concept. 3,016,000 years to the 10th power later. Or earlier. No. As much as God brought forth a drought in Abraham's life, he also brought forth a drought in Isaac's life and brought forth a drought in Jacob's life. One, two, three. Interesting story. Interesting picture. Have you ever had, in a spiritual sense, a drought? Okay. All of a sudden, nothing seems to happen. Nothing's good to happen. You can't see God, like God's not even listening to you. He's like, he doesn't even pay attention to you. He doesn't hear your cries. But what if he did? And what if he brought that spiritual drought upon you? You know, each one of us, on an individual basis, have to walk in the world of wilderness all by ourselves. No mom, no dad, no brother, no sisters, no relatives, no friends, no group, no nothing. Walk in there by ourselves and we wait. And sometimes it takes us a while. And we think, oh, God's mad at me. Well, maybe, maybe not. Maybe he says, I'm going to talk to you. I want you to be alone. And therefore, I'm separating you from everybody. And after a while, maybe maybe a week, month later, 2 months later, even a year later, maybe several years later, all of a sudden those people can't stand you, don't have anything to do with you, are your best friends. And you did nothing. And they didn't do anything. All of a sudden, everything's, oh well, life is good. That's what a drought's all about. God takes something away. Remember the book of Job? God giveth and God taketh. We say, oh, God never takes a blessing away from me. Really? God never takes a gift that he's given me away from me. Oh, yeah? He gave the entire land of Canaan to the entire family of Abram, and he took it away. He took it back. He kicked him out. Right? So is God a... When I was growing up, horrible word. It's called an Indian giver. You ever heard the phrase? And every time when you do something and you take it back from them, they're all, oh, you Indian giver. Well, that's actually just a God giver right there. He's taking it back. God gives you life, he can take it back. God takes your life, he can give it back. Right? So it kind of tells you a little bit of an outline. Now, the 50 event was what? You don't remember, huh? Well, he went up from Egypt after he got all the blessings, remember? He journeyed back up to Egypt. He didn't get cursed. He didn't get damned. He didn't go in a pit. He didn't, you know, no bolt of lightning came down. He went back. He went back up to the south area. Abraham went up from Egypt, and he and his wife, chapter 13, verse 1, his wife, and they had what? He took Lot with him. Lot went down to Egypt with him, by the way. Did you notice that? Lot went down with him. I wonder, did Lot's wife go down with him too? And Lot's children must have went down there with him too. We kind of down look on Lot. I'm sorry, this is the sixth event I should talk about here now. Anyway, he was very rich. Now, before he went down to Egypt, there's nothing in the Word of God that says he was rich. Now he comes back from Egypt. He goes back into the southern area, what we call the south, or what we call, well, it's called south, what we call lower section of the valley of water. We'll talk about that in a minute. He was rich in livestock and in silver and in gold. He went on his journey from the south. He went from Egypt in the south, verse 3, and he went on his journey from the south as far north as Bethel, the place where his tent had been in the beginning, between Bethel and Ol, and placed the place of the altar which he had made there first. And there Abram did something. What did he do? He called. Have you ever called out to God? No, not in tears, crying, pain. Have you ever just called out to him? Have you ever talked with him? Have you ever addressed him? Of course you have. Doesn't say exactly what he said, but he went back to the very same place. You remember, in the sixth event, nothing really seemed to happen there except that. He called out to God. We don't know what was said. We don't know what was communicated. We don't know what the situation was about. Doesn't tell us, does it? But he went back to the very first place. Why did he go back to the very first place? Because that's where God talked with him. You want to go back and hear what the Lord had to say to him. Have you ever gone back to your beginning? Ever gone back where you first began and say something to God? Maybe, thank you. You didn't. You delivered me from this, delivered my wife from this, and we're here. I've got all this cattle. I've got all this gold. I've got all this stuff. And you say, thank you for the great blessing that you've given me. You kind of relate to that a little bit? Well, also, he said, Lot was also with him. And then there was a battle, a fight. Between not Lot and Abram, but between Lot's, it says here, Lot's husband, Abraham's husbands, and the Canaanites were there. Now, what was the decision being made? Okay. Now, we say, did God have anything to do with this wing whatsoever? This is verse 7 of chapter 13. And there was strife between the herdmen of Abram's livestock and the herdmen of Lot's livestock. And the Canaanites and the Perizzites, also the Perizzites rather, lived there in the land. So Abraham said, okay, go to the left, I'll go right, you go right, I'll go left. Now, what's so beautiful about this particular song? It's the plains of Jordan. And once you go down to verse 10, see, we never picture, because that land down there now, you can't grow a weed. Plant a weed on that land is not going to work. Listen to this one though. And Lot, verse 10, lifted his eyes and saw the plains of Jordan, that it was dry, barren, desert, well watered. Like Egypt was well watered. Because they had gone down to Egypt, remember? They went down where the Nile's at, well watered. Land of Goshen, well watered. You can plant things there. Things grow. Great for the cattle. And it also says, like the Garden of Eden, yeah. So that part of the country, we don't think looks good, right? Well, we know why. Later got cursed. We know that one. But we have a picture sometimes in our mind. Lot, why did you pick that place for? Because it looked like the Garden of Eden. Wow. Nice place to be, right? We could be hostile toward Lot. We could have an attitude toward Lot. We could condemn Lot all we want. But that's not what the story is about. Because God wanted the separation to take place. It's not the hand of the herd, but it's the hand of God separating them. Now we have a separation between Lot and Abram. For a reason. What did God say to Abram when that took place? Verse 14, and Yahweh said unto Abram, after Lot had separated from him. Now, they weren't in the plains yet. They were farther north. Remember where he built the altar? Right? Up near Bethel? Lot was with them. Lot's wife was with them. Lot's kids was with them. All the herd were with them. The Canaanites were there. The Perizzites were there. And it was Lot that departed. It wasn't Abraham that moved north. It was Lot that departed and went south into the land of the plains of Jordan. That's what it says, right? Now he wants to lift up your eyes. Now look. So here's Ar in the northern area near Bethel, where he built the first altar. And he said, I want you to look around. I want you to go south, east, north, and west, all around. I want you to go for a walk. So he kind of walked around. He said, now all that, as I said to you before, when you first came here and you built an altar here, I said to you, your descendants will inherit this land. So now, back to the very same issue, from the very first time he was there, in the very first meeting, he said, I will give you the land of your... to your descendants. And here, again, God repeats the very same thing, but more in detail, right? Is he backing up his statement? Now, once again, if you're Abram, what was your thought? Oh, I don't have any kids. Right? All right. Now, the next one, this is called the... Oh, I'm sorry. That first one's a 50 event. I've got my numbers wrong. Anyway, and verse 18. And Abram moved his tent and went to dwell in the terebinth, or the oaks of Mamre. Now he started a little farther south, which is called Hebron, or Hebron. Hebron was a territorial area, as the oaks of Mamre was a territorial, big, big lot area. And we have here now, that he built another altar. Built another altar right there. And this particular altar is the one he comes back to. Plans of memory. That's all it says, right? What happens next? What happens next? 14th chapter. The war broke out. What a pleasant place to be. What a pleasant place to be. Now, so far, we see in his life some good things, and then the bad thing happened, turned out to be a blessing for him. And God keeps the promise with him, your descendants will inherit this place. And then, four kings, I said five kings last week, it meant four kings, from the east, moved west to conquer the land of Canaan. Right? This is the war between the four kings and the five kings. Whose side did Abram take? He took the side of the five. The king of Sodom, the king of Gomorrah, the king of Zoar, and the king of the nations, it's called. No, not the king of the nations, kings of something else. Anyway, you get the picture there. Chapter 14, verse 11. And after he had done, he went to war. The kings had taken all the goods from Sodom and Gomorrah and all the provisions and went their way, heading back, or went to continue on conquering. And also took Lot. And then Abraham had to do something. He had to find a couple of allies. That's what Hebron means, by the way. It's association of allies. Association of a military agreement, a military battle taken up. Abram had certain men that was good fighters, and they had certain men that were good fighters, and so the two brothers and Abram fought side by side. And then, when one of them escaped and told what's going on, then Abram did something. He destroyed the four empires. When you wipe out the king and the leadership, what happens to the land? No one's in control of it. People from the east were now free from these four dictators. Keep in mind, a guy named Nimrod, remember him? Way back there in the 11th chapter. How many kingdoms did he have? Interesting. Side note. Now, why did God do this? Just test out Abraham, see whether or not he would go to war? Did he test Abraham out? Because why? Did Abraham do it for himself? No. Did Abraham do it just because of nephew? Yes. But did Abraham do it for those five kings? Keep that in mind. Very, very important. He fought on the side of the five kings. He fought for them, and he delivered everything back to those five kings that were taken. Even the people, the servants, the money, all the goods. He gave it back to the very same men that he fought for. But something else took place that day. Remember what it was? Verse 16 says, so he brought back all the goods and brought them back to his brother Lot, good, and the women and all the people. And Melchizedek showed up the scene. Yes, Jeff.
Seems like an interesting testimony to the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah. It's that basically, you know, God's having mercy on you. God is protecting you. And then it seems like they...
Short period of time thereafter.
Yeah, a short period of time thereafter, they didn't even notice the witness of Lot. And,
yeah,
you know, they end up going up in flames.
Now, see, with that statement, you can say, Abraham, you were a bad judgment taking on and being on their side, saving their lives, saving their children's lives, saving their daughter's life, saving their men, saving them. You should have just let them die. Right? Oh no. That's not what God had in mind for him to do. In a sense, Abraham, in a sense, fought for what we call bad people. He fought on the side of bad people. Actually, he fought for the bad people. He didn't join the five in battle. He only had his other two men, companions, that fought in battle. Anyway, that's a very interesting statement, Jeff. Thank you. And so now, something was done. Now we know that Melchizedek was there, showed up, and he did something with Abraham. And this took a look at the seventh event. Very important seventh event. Was what? He went to war. Right? And he defeated four empires. That was started by Nimrod. Wiped him out. And now before he meets with the king of Sodom, the king of Salem, or God's king, actually King Shalom, it means the righteous and of Shalom of safety. And Shalom said something. He said, "For Elohim Most High, who has delivered your enemies into your hands." So the first thing that Abraham learned, yeah, he chased them all the way out and he killed them all off. Lo and behold, it was God who gave him the strength and power and the ability to do so. And then what Abraham did, before he had talked to the king, by the way, do you know what, in an old-fashioned Talmud, where he says the bread and wine, you know what that statement really kind of refers to? Yes, it can refer to the Messiah, don't get me wrong, but it's like breaking bread. And it's an old, old statement. You know what happens when you go to visit someone's house and you have dinner with them? That's breaking bread. So when they had, he brought the bread and the wine, was that all? No, I bet they sat and talked and had dinner together. That's my thinking. You know, he's talking to this individual who said, Abram of El Elyon, possessor of heaven and earth, has blessed you. I said, blessed be. I said, blessed be Abram. So the Most High God, the creator of heaven and earth himself, blessed Abraham. Would you like to have a blessing from the creator of heaven and earth? Well, surprisingly, you really have. You just didn't know it. But that's not too hard to figure out. And he said, now I have lifted my hands to the Most High God. I lift my hands to El Elyon. And so he turned down the offer that the king of Salem was going to give him. I lifted my hand to the Most High God, the possessor of heaven and earth. A big event, the seventh event in his life. Number seven, I find it very fascinating. It comes to a concluding matter. Yes.
I apologize to go on a short little rabbit hole, but during this little passage from 18, I guess to 20 here, it kept saying that Melchizedek brought him bread and wine. He, Melchizedek, the priest, and he, Melchizedek, blessed him. And blessed the Most High God. And it says, and he, and just keeps going down this line of he, and down to verse 20, and again, and he gave him a tenth of all. And that lowercase him, are we looking at Abraham, or is it Melchizedek that gave the tenth?
No, it says Abraham. It says that in big Hebrews, it says that he, Abraham, gave a tenth unto him. So we know that Hebrews records that very same example. And it said Abraham gave a tenth of all, his tithe of all he had to Melchizedek.
But if we didn't ever have the book of Hebrews looking at this, that line of he and he and he, it seems to flow. It was Melchizedek versus...
Yeah, that's typical of Hebrew. You really got to be careful who the he is in a lot of places. You also be careful who the she is in an awful lot. Now, I'll tell you this one thing's funny. My wife does this to me. Women do that all the time. She's telling me a story. She's got three women. All of a sudden, the woman said, da-da-da-da-da-da, and she said, da-da-da-da-da, and she said, da-da-da-da. Wait, who's the she? I don't know. She got all confused, you know. Sometimes the she is still the same next one, but the third one could be, no, that's the first one over here. The second one's over here. You know, it really gets me confused. So, but a woman can talk to a woman clear as mud. No, it's clearer water. They can see and understand and hear what's going on. I think it's kind of funny. But in a way, the writer in ancient Hebrew, you really got to pay attention to those. See, we're so used to capital H's. Helps us in English. There's no such thing as capitals in Hebrew. He just got to figure it out. No, but later on it says there who is who in the book of Hebrews. Who the he is. Okay, now, verse 1 of 15. I still got some time here. It's good. It's after these things, where the word is after these things. I know in Hebrew it says, the Devarim, after he got through talking, communicating with the king of Sodom, then Devarim Elohim is now talking to him. But entirely different. Now we know that God talked to him when he moved from his father's house territory into Canaan. We knew that God talked with him and even appeared to him in Bethel. We knew that God also was there and removed him from Egypt by and through telling the king, Pharaoh, you're a dead man walking. No, I'll get out of here. You know, and so he got out, and Abraham was blessed. We don't see how God blesses people like that, but that's his business, not ours. We want to curse him, but he says, no, I'm going to bless him because he has something in mind. Mercy and justice. Now, justice has to come. Keep on going now. This is unusual. What's so unusual about this particular place in Abraham's life? This is the eighth incident in his life. What took place? You don't notice it? All what?
I am your protector.
Okay. Why would he say that? Why? Yes?
The one thing I noticed is different is that, you know, we see in previous conversations between God and Abraham that when God says, I'm going to give you descendants, you're going to be as numerous and blah, 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 we don't really see a response from Abraham. But this is the first time you see him saying, wait a minute, you made this promise to me about children. When are you going to pay up?
When are you going to pay up? So you see this? Don't stop and think about this. He also talked to him in a vision. Now, we think that he's, oh, it's a dream, dream, dream. No. That word vision is horribly translated. It's like he appeared to him and showed him what's going to take place. He came and talked to Abraham to show him saying something. The word vision means to eyes to see. We think it means some kind of nap and a dream about it, right? Well, yes, you could take it that way. So let's go ahead and take it that way. Don't worry about it. Take it one way or the other. It doesn't matter. But he said now, don't be afraid. Now, why would Abraham be afraid? Why would Abraham be afraid at this point in time? He just won a huge battle. He's very, very wealthy. He's got a lot of gold, a lot of silver, a lot of cattle. He's got 400 men. And their wives, their children, they're under his care. He's a wealthy man. What's he afraid of? Yes.
Spoke, it seems like fear automatically came upon. Anytime a messenger came, an angel came upon, they said, don't be afraid. Every
right.
time.
But this is not what he's talking about here. It isn't that he appeared to him. He's going to tell him, don't be afraid. Okay, what I'm going to show you. I will protect you. I am your Mogan. And I am your reward. Because he asked, okay, Adonai Elohim, what will you give me? I don't have any children. Yeah, you said this when I first came here. And he said, your descendants. And I'm saying, okay. And he came back and three other times. He came back here in the same place again. And you said to your descendants, no children, right? So Abraham's trying to go through his brain. Okay, it's not possible, right? Would you think that's the first thing that went through his mind? Sounds like it right here, right? He says, I go childless. And the only one that's going to inherit when I die and my wife dies is my chief number one man. His son will have possession of all that I have. I have no relatives here. And my chief number one man, my top servant, the one guy who'll do anything for me, very loyal, very dedicated, loves and respects and honors me, he's got a son. He's going to get it all. That's what he said, right? And what was his response back? You've given me no offering. None's born in my house. And God was mad at him. Bolt of lightning. Says, if you're not listening to me, I'm leaving. What do you say?
Now you made me mad.
He said, nah. He is not going to take over anything. He's not going to own anything. It's going to come from your own body. Okay, as Abraham saying, okay, my own body, huh? Okay, I guess that's possible. Got to find me another woman. I'll get to that in a minute, yes.
When every day I'm holding on to promises for my children to come out of the darkness and into the light, and the enemy says, no, it's not going to happen. And I say, no, but I have a promise.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about what God says, you're going to be afraid, but I'm going to show you. Because he's going to show him some real bad news. Really negative, really damning news. heartbreaking news, frightening news. And Abraham tries to fight to prevent it from happening. And he doesn't succeed. That's what the vision's about. Yes?
Every time you have a blessing, that automatically comes with it a risk. Because whatever you have, you can lose. And the bigger the blessing, the more there is to lose. If it's a whole big family, there's more to lose than if all you have is a few dimes to yourself.
But Abraham didn't lose on this one. His descendants did 400 years later, but he didn't lose. Okay? Now, so God did something, took him out and said, look above you. Oh, must have been, you know, midnight or sometime dark anyway. And he saw all these stars. Now remember, vision. He's showing him something. He's letting Abraham see with his eyes what God is going to do. Right? Okay. And Abraham did something. He did what? He believed. Okay. He said, what did he believe? He said, okay, it's going to come from my body. I guess there's a lot of kids up there. Yeah, okay. It's come from my body. Oh, good. No, it's arrogant. He was an arrogant man. He's a humble man. Respectful man. Raised his hand to God. Knowing who delivered him from, or had actually the enemy put into his hands to destroy the enemy. Four empires. Wiped out. Through Abraham and his other two allies. And he believed Abraham, and guess what God said? Oh, man. And he, God, counted him to him for righteousness. And then it says here, verse 7, very close attention to me. I am Yahuwah, who brought you out of Ur of Chaldean. He didn't say, I'm the one that brought you out of heaven. No, I brought you out of Ur. So way back when his dad was going to leave, did Abraham hear God talk to him and says, I'm bringing you out? No, he brought his father out. Out of the land of Ur, right on the Euphrates River. They're out of the land of Ur already. And his father remained. And Abraham went forward. Now, he says, verse 8, Adonai, Yahuwah, how shall I know that I will inherit it? Was that a legitimate question? Oh, good one. Yeah. This is the eighth event. Now, he asked God a question. Right? I believe. Then he says, okay, Yahuwah, how should I know that I will actually inherit it? What did he do? What did the vision tell you? Or what is this incident, I should say? What God was showing, revealing to Abraham what's going to happen to his heirs. What was he showing him? The most wonderful place in the face of the earth? The gorgeous land of promised land? What was he going to show him? Oh. Bondage. Your descendants, your heirs are going to go into slavery. That's where they're going, Abraham. I want you to bring these certain animals, and they do certain things. We know the fire went through it, and it was only God went through it, and Abraham couldn't. Deep sleep fell upon him. He couldn't be part of it. So it's a covenant with God, with himself, should I say. And that's really not a good story, is it? Now you understand why God says, do not be afraid. Because great horror, fear, trembling came over Abram when he saw what it was all about. the cutting of the house being split in part into total bondage. Okay? Each one of those animals represents something I'm not going to talk about today because there's not enough time for it. Because they're only going through. If it, verse 13, no, certainly your descendants will be strangers in land, not theirs, and will serve them, and they will be afflicted, those for 400 years, actually it's 400 plus, we'll talk about that later, sometime in the future, what those dates are about, because it's very important. Well, that'll happen during the time of Jacob's time, I'll explain those numbers in a minute. I mean, then. And he says, now, he's going to judge that nation, that he, Elohim, is going to bring the descendants of Abram into the house of bondage. And the fourth generation received the worst of it all. Good news for the first generation. Wonderful place to call the land of what? Goshen, right? Beautiful place. Best place that they had. And by the time the fourth generation came on, or the 400 year, into the 400 years, or close to 400 years, the last 400 years, last 100 years, was not good news. It was that what took place. So he said, but I'll bring him back. He says, but in the fourth generation, they shall return here. And we won't talk about the iniquities of Amorites. It's not complete. Another way. He's going to bring him right back here to where Abraham is at. Abram is right here right now. So when we look at these events, this is what, the eighth one? Yeah, I'm about ready to call it quits. He said, do not be afraid, Abram. I am the one that's going to protect your and your inheritance. Not just your, but your inheritance as well. Ninth event. What happened? Ninth event. Hey, what?
See the question again?
Yeah. What was the next thing that took place? Then Sarai, Abraham's wife, all right, took Hagar. Now Abram, at this age, has another wife. Now he's got a wife. Another wife. He's got a second wife. Okay, to fulfill. To do what? Well, since it's supposed to come from his body, and she can't have kids, okay, take my hand. She would not, by the way, an old hag. She's a young, very young lady. And very young, attractive one. They just came from Egypt. Right? And she was one of the bond Egyptians who was given to Sarah by Pharaoh a few years earlier. And of course, we kind of know what the story is about. And then, see, now Abraham's 65 years old now. This has been 10 years since he's first called in. Now 65, Hagar becomes his wife. It's 10 years. Now what happened? We kind of know the story, right? Well, she began to make fun of Sarah, taunt her, not say very nice things to her, because now she's Abraham's wife, so she can't do anything with it, right? And then what did Sarah do? Well, the angel said, verse 7, now the angel of Yahuwah found her by a spring of water in the wilderness, by a spring in the way of Shur, and he said, Hagar, Sarah's handmaid, where are you coming from? Oh, and where were you going? As if he didn't know. And she said, well, I had to flee from the presence of Sarai. Why? Because she's being mistreated. Simple as that. No, she was not a strong, muscular, athletic female that took lessons of wrestling every day. No, she was just a woman. And she was pregnant. A young woman, pregnant. And Sarah apparently was a whole lot stronger than she was. A whole lot more mature, whatever it was. And he said, now, wait a minute. I want you to return. Okay. Now, what was her response? Whew, thank you. Well, not really. The angel of the Lord had to say something else to her. You will multiply your descendants exceedingly. I will multiply your descendants exceedingly so that you shall not be counted or numbered. Behold, you are with a child. Now, listen very carefully to this. You'll bear a son, call his name Ishmael, and the latter part of verse 3, because Yahshua has heard your affliction. He didn't hear the lad's, heard hers. What happened? He shall be a wild man. His hand will be against every man, and every man's hand will be against him, and he shall dwell in the presence of his brethren. Now, a division has begun. A serious division has begun, right? In fact, a deadly decision or division has taken place. Number one son. Who was the number one son? Certainly impregnated. Who's the number one son? Ishmael. He's the first of his loins. Physical. And he will have a father for the first part of his growing up. Until a certain point in time. Then he is removed as a son. Removed as a son of Abraham. Abraham didn't like that decision, remember? We'll get to there later. But he's removed. He was kicked out. He was abandoned by his father. Now, God said something about him, that son will lift his hand against every man. Really? And every man's hand will be against him. And guess where he's going to live? He's going to live amongst the sons of Isaac, his brother. That's what it says. Now, did it happen immediately? It's a prophetic statement. Way down deep in the future. These is the words of Devarim Elohim. These are not the words of Richard Agee. And if we look and we say, wow, their hand is up against every other man, and other men's hands are up against them. Wow. Is that happening? Is it because they made a mistake? Is it because Sarah made a mistake? Abraham made a mistake? Or God says, I'm going to do something here. What do you think he's going to do? All right, so at this point in time, I'm not going to continue on. I'll come back next week with number 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, well, I think it's 20, 25. There's a lot of them in there. But these events are very important for us to remember because, see, God dealt with that man first. And we need to kind of see and understand how God thinks, how God works, how God acts, what God had in mind. And remember, he's told him of fear. Don't be afraid. Well, I'm going to show you. I'm going to picture you and let you see what I'm going to do. We have to do one. The one thing I want to stand up for, if I can do this, there are some real descendants of Ishmael that have understood the truth and have turned away from their own people and are now on the side of Isaac's children, Abraham's children. I don't know how many there are. It doesn't make any difference to me. It's not my issue. My issue is that if we have that proves you that God is going to do and hear what Hagar had to say. What we have to pay attention to is he says he's did this because of Hagar. Very important statement.
Wait a minute. He did this because of Hagar? Because he felt compassion for her?
Yes.
She called out to him.
She called out to Hagar. Hagar needed compassion. She got it.
How does this relate for us today? How should we as believers look at this? What eyes should
we look at? My personal opinion, be careful. Don't judge Hagar. Don't judge
her descendants.
Don't judge them. God's going to carry out his plan whether we like it or not.
But he's going to use them for his glory.
Because no man can be glorified before God no matter how good they are.
Right. Not in our own goodness.
And so there's going to be mercy given and shown unto Hagar. Compassion shown unto Hagar. But she had to return. Or at this point when she had to return. And at this point in time she had to return to stay under jurisdiction she didn't want to be under. But she did it.
She submitted herself.
She did. Wow. How many women would say, I'm heading back to Egypt right now. I'm getting out of here. Well, she was a bond woman. She wasn't free. She had no place to go. She couldn't run anywhere. No matter what she ran into, she's a bond woman. Whoever captured her would take her back to the person who owned her. In this case, it was Sarah. That's another story later on. We'll get to that. We'll get more about Hagar much, much later in the future. I can't explain Hagar and all things today. But there's always hope, even though the picture looks horribly negative. Vengeance are mine, says the Lord. Has God put vengeance against you when you've done something against somebody else? The answer is yes. How did he take vengeance? He took the life of his son. That was the vengeance. He'll take the life of his son for every person. Actually, it's already happened. People just have to stop and think about it, what happened in their life. You know, come to believe that this actually did take place. We think of vengeance that God is just going to bring down hellfire and brimstone. Even the book of Revelations, he didn't really want to send the bulls down, but had no choice. Yes.
If I can say this right, it is said that when God did it this way through Christ, it was in his benefit. He was going to get more because of us that would come to him than what the other way.
Yeah, when we get farther into some of the events of Abraham's life, there's a particular event in his life that Abraham got the picture. Really big.